I know she's supposed to be 104, but we've got to make her look vaguely appealing to her. We don't want to scare people. So they rouged her up, I think.
She is obviously a star of an actress.
She's a dame.
You know, her one-liners and her little quips, the audience at the Monmouth Savoy last night always laughed at those points.
I love the idea of going out for a night at the Monmouth Savoy.
Oh, it's brilliant, man.
Have you got loving seats at the back?
It's a beautiful theatre for what it is.
We should actually just break in because I think the microphones have been on all this time, recording our conversation about Downton Abbey. Big issue, clearly.
Yeah, yeah. And I've said, I have not sat through a whole episode.
You had never seen Downton Abbey until you went to go and see the film.
That's right.
Have you seen The Crown?
No.
Neither have I. We're totally out of it.
You're not talking about The Crown pub in Monmouth?
No, I'm not talking about The Crown pub, Keith. I know you would have been there.
And for listeners who aren't familiar with Monmouth, we should point out it's a small market town on the borders of England and Wales.
It's Welsh.
It is Welsh. Oh, sorry. It's a small border town in Wales,
quite
close to the border with another country, which is called England.
Yeah, I've got to go back there and live, so I'm not going to say it's on the border.
I think we've been a bit remiss. We haven't actually said who we are. We are Good Charity, Bad Charity.
Yeah, I'm Keith Davis.
And I'm Camilla McGibbon.
And I'm David Preston. We're very excited today because we've got a really fascinating guest on the podcast. She is Alex Scales, a director at the Cass Centre for Charity Effectiveness. Alex is particularly keen to talk to us about mergers and acquisitions. In fact, Alex actually contacted us direct and said, I really want to come and chat to you about this, and we want to get this subject out and aired about charities coming together to be bigger or coming together to become leaner and fitter or whatever it is. A fascinating area of discussion. I'm sure lots of people running charities have come into this sort of area. And indeed, as we're talking just outside, both of you, Keith and Camilla, have had experience of this very thing.
Absolutely, and I think it's something that is going to come on the agenda of a lot of charities going forward in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
If we're talking about mergers and acquisitions, I feel like we're having a business discussion.
Yeah.
And I think one of the problems for me is the word. Is it a merger? Is it a takeover? Is it a partnership? What are we calling it? How do we do it? And what I'm looking forward to hearing Alex tell us about is her 7-step program.
And the other thing, of course, this brings us back to that sort of age-old unease, the unease of the charity sector in talking about things which are sort of vaguely related to business. And wow, suddenly mergers and acquisitions sounds scarily like a business proposition, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think what's going to happen, it's going to be about survival. And that's why this is, for me, at the present moment in time, such a topic that's high on the agenda.
Yeah, survival. And a lot of the steps that Alex talks about is how we respect each other in all of this and how we keep our own identity.
And I think that's a nice word. All this has to be done with respect because you cannot just say, we're a bigger charity, we're going to take you over. It's got to be done with respect if it's going to be delivered properly.
We have our questions prepared. Alex Scales, up next. Alex Scales is with us. Now, Alex is a senior academic within Cass Business School's Faculty of Management and a director at the Cass Centre for Charity Effectiveness. Over the years, she's combined first-class skills and expertise from her earlier career with PricewaterhouseCoopers and Deutsche Bank. She teaches and co-leads the main core module resource management in the voluntary sector on the MSc Charities Programme. Alex, extraordinary CV that we have to pre-see into 45 seconds. Have we done a good job there?
You've done a brilliant job.
That's a relief. We should say. Your first experience of the charity sector is quite interesting. We were looking into this only about 10 or 12 years ago. You got involved with a group of charities in Suffolk.
Yeah, absolutely.
And ended up bringing them all together.
Absolutely. At the time, I was on the board of the Ipswich CVS, the support organisation that provided education and support and training to those charities who are providing services to the front line. And I ended up chairing that organisation, and an opportunity came through via a government funding stream, Transforming Local Infrastructure, for infrastructure bodies to see what they could do to become more effective and efficient. It was kind of like a last chance saloon, or that's certainly how it was portrayed at the time. And we ended up bringing along 14 organisations who were interested in coming together to form one countywide infrastructure or support organisation.
Did you enjoy doing that?
It was challenging at times. I think all those involved would agree it was a bit like herding cats. And it was hard work. You know, trustees are doing it on a voluntary basis, and we were putting in a lot more hours than we would probably have done, and we set ourselves quite tight time limits to achieve it. But I just learned so much, and I think if you enjoy learning from new experiences, it was a fantastic opportunity, albeit responsible for some of my grey hair, I have to say.
Are you all still friends?
I think so. I mean, you know, inevitably there's going to be some fallout along the way. There were some organisations outside that group of 14 who decided it wasn't for them, and they had very good reasons. And then there were others who decided that it would benefit the services they were providing and their beneficiaries more if they did come together and form one organisation.
You used the word there about organisations. Did you mean charities, different charities?
Absolutely.
Was there a diversity of delivery yards, whether it was children, age or...
They were predominantly what is termed infrastructure organisations. So those ones, a bit like National Council for Voluntary Organisations, NCVO, which I'm sure you're familiar with, operating on a national basis. There was the Children and Young People Support Organisation for Suffolk. There were numerous volunteer centres, so quite small, physically present in individual locations across the county, providing services to people who wanted to volunteer for charities and charities who were seeking volunteers. And there was the Rural Acre, which is the infrastructure support body for those organisations working in that space. So they were predominantly infrastructure support organisations and volunteer services.
What in your experience was the most difficult people to convince that merger was a good way forward? Was it the chief execs? Was it the chairs? Was it the board members?
I think a number of the chairs thought it was a good idea and could see the sense in it and were looking beyond their individual organisation. Obviously, for the chief execs, it's really difficult because by combining a number of organisations into one, there is only going to be one chief exec going forward, which I think makes it always difficult, particularly within mergers within the charity sector. There's no significant financial payoff or reward for people who are stepping out. And I think it was some of the trustees sitting on the boards of the individual organisations where an organisation had been in a particular geography for a significant amount of time, and they felt, you know, very strongly at times that, you know, they needed a local physical presence with people from that local community, local geography leading that. So I think it was at a number of levels, but very much representative of what we see with mergers across the sector.
I think this is a brilliant case study because all the problems that you've listed are problems that I've experienced. So one of the problems is you can get so far down a road where you think that everybody's on board, but what you find is that people are digging their heels in. Then what do you do?
Well, I think, I mean, one of the learnings from this experience for me is it's really important wherever possible to almost do it in bite-sized chunks. So if you can take the smaller decisions, you can then move on to the next step. That makes it sound easier than it actually is, but I think the worst case scenarios are when you get so close to the finishing line and someone pulls the plug. Now, I mean, by taking it in small steps doesn't necessarily mean that that's not going to happen at the last moment, but it's how do you keep everyone going in that direction and be, you know, as sure as you possibly can that they're coming with you.
And looking on to now, taking us up to date, is it thriving?
Yeah. It's certainly thriving. It's got a much stronger voice working with the local authorities, the county council. They're able to access funding. I think the board has been strengthened over time. I think people, there was an attractiveness in what had been achieved, which attracted new board members to step up and decide that they wanted to come on board.
Good.
And I think it's fair to say they've managed to maintain a presence across the county to as much of a degree as they possibly can, giving their funding constraints.
It must be difficult, though, bringing mergers and acquisitions, the language of the private sector, to charities, particularly where you've got founders, CEOs who are embedded within an organisation, people who think they've been doing this fantastic thing for so long, and then it actually becomes possibly a bit shocking when they're forced together with people who don't think they've necessarily been doing the right thing for so long.
I think the acquisition word is particularly provocative. Yeah. You won't hear that used that much. I think merger is becoming more accepted, but it is still very much a Marmite subject, if I can use that term. And I think we have to remember that the sector isn't homogenous. What might be right for one organisation will be completely wrong for another, which is much better to stay how they are. You know, small is beautiful, potentially close to their community, close to their area of need, and they absolutely know what they're doing, and they're doing it really well.
Yeah, but I think you're right. I coach and mentor a number of chief execs in Wales, and I've got one of those charities at the moment that are emerging. Okay, with another of the same service area. But it's about survival now, because I think the challenge financially, the challenge with volunteers, and the challenge of the number of people that need services is getting greater. So I think there's a big merger opportunity now.
I think financial sustainability certainly is a driver. You know, ideally, I would like to see merger considered by all boards at a regular interval to see whether actually, rather than for survival, it can really be used as a positive strategic tool for them to be able to achieve more, to deliver their objectives, perhaps within a quicker time frame, you know, as well as being as efficient financially as possible.
I think that's quite interesting to put mergers on the agenda as an away day question or something like this, because whenever I've come across it, it's almost been used in a threatening or in a negative way. When you put something on an agenda as just a regular occurrence, then people look at it and think, oh, right, so we need to consider this. This is one of our tasks as trustees. And then it takes that kind of sting out of the question. How do you then enforce this in terms of governance?
Well, there are clauses in a lot of the guidance that is published in terms of trying to encourage boards to consider merger at regular intervals. I'm hoping through, I mean, for example, the students that come through our courses, yep, you know, we helps. Try and demonstrate yep. that the language isn't to be, you know, whatever language you want to use, it's the underlying substance that you should be considering to demonstrate where there might be opportunities. I had a lovely example with a student just last year who was absolutely adamant that mergers shouldn't even be used as a word, really. And at the end of the course came up to me and said, actually, they'd had discussions. It was one of the air ambulances. And that she'd gone back and they'd discussed it and ultimately had decided to put to the board that they could combine just one part of their organisation to enable more weekend and night flying. So they, Brilliant. You know, she yeah. could see the advantages and thought it through and how could they deliver that.
But you are part of a business school, yeah. and that's really fascinating too, because one of the things that is a concern, shall we say, is the language of the boardroom. So it's not just whether we use mergers, acquisitions, takeover, these kind of things, but whether we use words in the boardroom like audit, robust. And these are words that people who come from a business side, as opposed to, say, the volunteer side, they tend to either use and then have charity trustees, and I've seen it almost reel back from the table, or they think they shouldn't use those kind of words because they're in a different environment.
I think there is a real issue with being overly businesslike, and I certainly learnt that when I took on my first trustee position, in terms of watching my language, watching my I'm very impatient by nature, watching my impatience, which yes. perhaps something would have happened yeah. a lot more quickly in the corporate world. And you cut your teeth, and I learnt. I think there is a knee-jerk reaction, which is then to step right back and be quite uncomfortable and not sure of what your position is and how you should be communicating and how you can best translate your skills and expertise to a different boardroom table.
Quite interesting. In your paper, you talk a little bit about the skills of negotiating specifically charity mergers and how that differs from from the business sector. In the business sector, a negotiation would involve a chunk of money on a table to sort of ease the negotiating process. And presumably you haven't necessarily got that in cases with the vast majority of charities. What are you actually negotiating then?
You're negotiating on the basis that the beneficiaries or the service users are being held absolutely at the centre and the forefront, if you can be held at the centre and the forefront at the same time, but in the minds of those who are taking the decision, and you're not necessarily blurring that with what's in the best interest of the organisation. Now, easy for me to say that if you've had an organisation that's been in existence for many, many years, or you're a founder and you believe passionately in what you have created, it may perhaps have some very heart-tugging history to it. But I think that is, if you're going to move more towards a business stance, it's taking the emotion out of it and holding very clearly the rationale that it is in the what is in the best interest of providing services to your beneficiaries. Yeah.
Ask you a bit about your students. I'm really interested. Who comes? Who wants to study charity effectiveness?
People who come on the course, I think they're ambitious. They are interested in acquiring knowledge around the robust frameworks and perhaps research that they can then translate into action for their organisations.
Yeah. I mean, it might be helpful if you, why don't you just give us a sort of an overview of what your course offers? I mean, there must be people listening who will be thinking, this might be something I'm interested in.
Yeah, I mean, it's a charity master's degree. It's been specifically developed on an executive part-time basis. We're hugely fortunate in that we're allowed to peg the master's fee at the undergraduate fee level as opposed to a typical master's degree. And it covers, we have specialist pathways covering voluntary sector management, overseas development organisations, so international NGOs. We have a specialist stream in marketing, communication, grant making and philanthropy. And we work with the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales to do a specialist pathway in accounting and taxation, specifically for charities.
But the growth of it as a study is quite interesting in itself, because, I mean, it says that there was perhaps a lack of professionalism, a lack of a sense that specific academic qualifications were needed to run charities, doesn't it?
Well, I think the traditional model of being given donations and perhaps grants to deliver services has changed, and this blurring of boundaries between a purely social purpose driven charity with perhaps those who want to use enterprise to deliver a social purpose, right the way through then to on the corporate side, where they're under increasing pressure from shareholders and perhaps and staff equally of the younger generations now to demonstrate, you know, what social gain they're delivering as well as their profit. I think, you know, it's a really interesting position. And with that comes a need to learn the management and business side, which can then, you know, as well as to see how it is best combined and can be best combined with that passion and enthusiasm of the charity.
So are you seeing they graduate and the next thing is a startup?
Not necessarily. The typical graduation path we believe is that people within a 1-2 year period of having graduated from the master's degree will either move or organization or move upwards within their organization.
And would you say, is there a sort of sense of a philosophy to what you're talking about? I mean, you know, are we in this environment where, you know, that you are teaching charities how to be big, bad, lean machines, which are sort of growing forward and
absolutely
moving
not
at the forefront of the creative economy?
Let's use the word professional, David.
Big, bad, lean machines. I mean, everyone involved has got cross-sector backgrounds. All are deeply embedded in charities and the non-profit sector. So we've got it from a number of angles. And then we bring in a plethora of guest speakers who are all experienced leaders in the charity sector. So it's very much demonstrating how they have blended business practice with the charity environment. And I think that's the absolute crucial point. And we're certainly not, you know, just indoctrinating on business practice and driving a financial surplus. That is absolutely not where we are.
As you look across the sector now, you're in a strong position to do that. How do you see the level of skills and expertise in the sector? Are we better than we were?
I see some really good examples of skills and expertise being used out there. And I see a real appetite to not only improve, but to be able to learn from others in terms of what could help individuals and their teams and their organisations to be able to achieve more.
I think there is a lot of good chief execs that are coming through. Those people that are more open to learning from everybody else and having somebody around the table saying, if I was in that position, this is what I would do, that is so powerful.
Bringing things back to the mergers point that we started at, do you look across the sector now and think there are too many charities doing the same thing, they should all get together, there are too many people competing for funds?
I think you have to look at it on a subsector basis. I think there are areas where funding is really tight. For example, going back to infrastructure organisations, it really hurts to read that perhaps another local infrastructure organisation has ceased to exist. And I think there are other sectors where it's sad when you hear that they are competing against each other in a small geography with the same local authority for fundings. And you do wish that they could either work collaboratively to overcome that or to do something like a formal merger.
And presumably the wasted resources as well. Three different organisations with their own infrastructures delivering the same thing is a waste of resources ultimately. And surely funders see that in many cases, don't they? And perhaps trying to persuade organisations to get together.
I think for a lot of the smaller organisations, we're being a bit tough on them in terms of they're already pared down to the bare minimum. They are continually firefighting and living very hand-to-mouth. And so I think for those ones, it's less about saving resource, but perhaps an opportunity to strengthen the operations as opposed to cutting costs. Because I think we have to recognise that the cost base is pretty thin for a lot of organisations. Mm.
Can I ask one last sort of political question? Mm-hmm. Quite seriously, do you think there's a situation in which charities are taking over the role that previously the state has held? And if so, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing?
I think there's a real danger of it. And I think also boards and charities have to really guard their independence, which is so paramount to their role within civil yes. society and democracy. And I think, you know, it's very difficult if your dominant funder is government and then to maintain that independence of voice.
Yeah. Either way, we probably have to have a more nuanced relationship between government and charities, don't we? Isn't that part of the point? Do we need a minister to grapple with this? Oh, another minister to grapple with this.
One of the many ministers that since we started the podcast we've had.
A dedicated minister.
I think we're done. Alex, it's been fantastic talking to you, hearing about the Centre for Charity Effectiveness at Cass Business School. If people do want more information, put that into a Google search and off you go.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Alex Scales.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you.
Thank you. We're all murmuring thank yous. This is Good Charity, Bad Charity. We've just had Alex Scales, director at the Centre for Charity Effectiveness, with us. This is an extraordinary time at the moment where the charity sector is almost being, I don't want to say dragged into the 21st century, but working on a different level than it has done before. And the fact that there is a master's degree, it's about realising there are standards that we have to achieve.
Yeah, and it is about needing to step up. You know, there are more pressures on charities now than there ever has been in the past. And talking to Alex today, you know, there's a lot of connections with how we operate this podcast to help that whole excellence drive.
It is interesting that the way you give something status, you create an MA in it, and it's almost just by doing that you give it status. And the more we can raise the status of the charity sector, the people who are involved in it, the better our beneficiaries benefit, if that isn't too many B words, the better society benefits. Mm. It's not a more business arena, it's a more professional arena now. And the tools to make people more professional, to deal better, to engage with government, to engage with funders. We have to give people those tools.
And we started off talking about businesses coming into charities. And, you know, if people from business are coming in, they need to learn some of this stuff as well so that they can make better progress within a charity that they get involved with.
Yeah, and so they can not think of charities as a place where they deposit their ethics.
Absolutely, you know, this openness, this honesty, this trust that needs to be developed between business and charities to deliver a better product to the end user, yeah, spot on, isn't it?
And key to trust is getting to know people, having multi cups of coffee. And if an academic environment is not about that, well, it could be about multi-pints, of course, too. But at least you're talking in an informal situation, you're breaking down barriers, and you're learning stuff.
Could you have a glass of wine as well?
Oh, you could have a glass of wine.
Okay.
In the words of Mr. Carson of Downton Abbey, I think, my lord, our work is done. You've been listening to Good Charity, Bad Charity. I'm David Prest.
I'm Keith Davis.
And I'm Camilla McGibbon.
If you want to catch up on our website, it's goodcharitybadcharity.com. There are pictures on there. There are links to all the other episodes. There are lots of stuff for you to learn and explore and find out more about. If you'd like to sponsor us or partner with us in some way, we're happy to hear from you. Contact us via the website. We are recorded here at Whistledown Studios, founded by Octavia Hill in 1874, in Borough, in South London, a boutique studio of choice for UK podcasters. Dan Hardoon has been our no-nonsense editor and producer. We're delighted to have him. And from us all, thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.